This is a special edition of Faith in Action entitled Sons of Melchizedek, where we welcome priests from the Archdiocese of Indianapolis and the Diocese of Lafayette in Indiana to tell us their vocation stories. We are so grateful to and thankful for our priests as they serve us and bring us the sacraments daily. Before we introduce today's special guest priest, we'd like to pray for you, Father. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Gracious and loving God, we thank you for the gift of our priests. Through them, we experience your presence in the sacraments. Help our priests to be strong in their vocation. Set their souls on fire with love for your people. Grant them the wisdom, understanding, and strength they need to follow in the footsteps of Jesus. We ask this through Jesus Christ, who lives and reigns as our eternal priest. Amen.
Welcome, this is Gordon Smith, and this is the Sons of Melchizedek Show. I am interviewing today Father Will Summerlin of the Lafayette Diocese, newly assigned to Central Catholic High School as the chaplain there. Welcome, Father Summerlin.
Thank you for having me.
We are happy to have you, and this is a show about vocations, and so we're going to be delving into Father Summerlin's past and seminal times in his life when he made decisions to join the priesthood. How long have you been a priest, Father?
Just a little over 4 years.
So your ordination was June 1st of 2019.
That's correct.
You're a pre-COVID priest.
Yeah, pre-COVID, barely.
and that was tough. All time after that was very tough for everyone. So we are thankful that you're a priest for the diocese here, and we're happy that you're at the high school. Now, the high school hasn't had a full-time chaplain for a couple years. Is that right?
Yeah, just a couple. It's been about 31 years since they've had a full-time chaplain. So the last time they had one was 1992. So I'm the first one since then.
Good. I'm sure you have your work cut out for you. You had a Catholic education growing up in grade school and high school. Where did you go to grade school and high school?
Grade school, I went to St. Mary Gretti Grade School in Westfield. High school, went to Guerin Catholic High School, Noblesville.
So you've dealt with high school-aged Catholic kids before and non-Catholic, I'm sure.
That's right.
And so you have your work cut out for you, but you know what the game plan is, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Now, the Lafayette school system works a little differently than some of the other schools and grade schools and high schools in the rest of the diocese. Can you explain a little bit about how that works?
Sure, yeah. So it's there's kind of an integration system for all the schools in Lafayette. So the grade schools kind of naturally funnel into Central Catholic High School, and you usually can do one of two tracks. Track one would be you start out at St. Mary's Cathedral School, which would be kindergarten through third grade. Then you would automatically go to St. Boniface Grade School, which is only fourth, fifth, and sixth grade.
I see.
And then you would go to Central Catholic for 7th through 12th. If you do the second track, you would start at St. Lawrence. St. Lawrence has kindergarten through 6th. And then you would go to Central Catholic, 7th through 12th.
I see. And you were most recently, before this assignment, you were at St. Boniface, right?
Yeah, St. Boniface and St. Lawrence both. So I would visit each grade school once a week. I'd visit St. Boniface on Thursdays and St. Lawrence School on Wednesdays.
Well, that's kind of cool, Father, because now you get to see some of the same kids that were in grade school in high school.
Right. Yeah, it is a privilege.
So you're growing up. You were originally from Noblesville, or your family lived there, and you went to St. Maria Goretti, mm-hmm. which is happens to be my home parish as well. So I've known you since I know you by first name, and I'm not going to use that to hear today in this interview, but I've known you for a number of years, and you've known some of my children, and I would say you hung out together mm-hmm. at least during youth group and grade school and high school. What year was it that you started thinking that you might have a vocation?
So I was 13, so would have been seventh grade is when I first heard the call to become a priest. So.
And how would that call? Was it on the telephone? What kind of call was it, Father?
I mean, it was. I did hear the voice of God in a very powerful way, in which He communicated to me directly.
How though?
So I wasn't like in church or in chapel. It was kind of out of the blue, just throughout my normal day activities. I was hearing this voice of God kind of penetrate the depths of my soul, and He said to me, "You are to be a priest."
Wow.
Very clear. And he repeated that phrase over and over again for 2 weeks straight. The only time I did not hear him speaking was when I was asleep. So it was jarring. Was not expecting it, but many years later, I was reading the autobiography of, no, not the autobiography, the letters of Mother Teresa, right? Uh-huh. And she talks about she heard her calling to start the Missionaries of Charity on a train. So sometimes God does, he gives it to you in kind of a random moment to get your attention. Where if I heard those words when I was like praying in the church, I might have easily rationalized it, saying, well, it probably was just my own thought, pious thoughts at church. But when it happens to you randomly throughout the day, there's no way you can deny where it's coming from.
So it's in the grade school during Mass, but also when you went home at night, mm-hmm. when you were playing basketball or whatever you were doing in the neighborhood.
Yep, and in everything. Yeah, so it was, God made it very clear. And then after, as suddenly as it came, he started to, and then he stopped 2 weeks later, it was just silent.
So you got this call, but did you answer it?
No, not right away. I was deeply afraid and terrified. I didn't really know everything that a priest does. I mean, you know, you go to Mass on Sunday, you know that Father says Mass and hears confessions. You don't see a lot of the things that he does behind the scenes. But also there's the world and the devil that tells you you don't want to do this. It's very countercultural. The lies of you're going to be unhappy because you can't get married. You know, you can't have your own kids. So I bought into all those lies from the evil one and from the world and thought I had a better plan than God, because I already had kind of an idea of what I was wanting to do with my life. And this is, God, this doesn't fit my plans. And it's something that really goes against what the world says you should do. So I ran away from the call for the next 5-6 years.
And by running away, you just ignored it, or you just went on with the day-to-day activities of your life? How do you mean you ran away from it? You just, at age 13, 14, there's nothing you can do about it at that time.
Right.
So let's say you went into high school and you started going through the day-to-day activities there, but still you were surrounded by religious people with a vocation. We had Father Jenko at the time, I think, at Garen.
It was Father Dale Ehrman when I was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And surely some of those priests might have had influence on you. Did you talk to them about this?
Yeah, so I did. I think by the time I was a junior in high school, I started talking to, I went to Father Dale Ehrman. He was the chaplain of Garen at the time, but he was also in residence at St. Mary Gregory, my home parish. So I would see him on Sunday. So he has a very, just kind of a calm disposition. And he also has a lot of education in the spiritual life. And I knew him pretty well. So I talked to him for the first time. And when I was a junior in high school, just once. And then I saw him regularly once a month when I was a senior in high school. And that was just because I knew that's what I should be doing, should be talking about it. Did I really want to talk about it? No. So what does it mean running away? Yeah, I still went to Mass, did all the things I was supposed to do, but it was more of an interior running away, as in I pushed that memory of that call out of my mind as much as possible. I tried to put on a front where I didn't try to act like I like things of the faith so that people wouldn't suggest that I become a priest.
You wanted to be cool.
Yeah, I didn't want people to say, hey, you should become a priest, and then that would make me think about it more. So I'm like, well, I just got to appear kind of like an average guy, not someone who's super zealous for the faith. When I would go to pray, I would go to prayer time, but I wouldn't actually talk to God because I didn't want him to repeat those same words again. So yeah, I went through all the motions, but I really didn't have an interior prayer life.
You mentioned Mother Teresa a few minutes ago, and she had a dark night of the soul, or whatever you want to call it, for years, they say. But sounds like you had some denial there, and you weren't in receiving mode, even though the call had been made.
Right.
So what happened after you talked to Father Dale Ehrman, junior, senior year type time frame at the high school? Because you made a jump from there to go directly into seminary, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. So by the time I was, it was about the fall of my senior year, he told me I needed to talk to the vocation director, who was Father Brian Doerr at the time. So Father Brian Doerr gave me a book called To Save 1,000 Souls. It's a book on discerning priest diocesan priesthood specifically. So I read that book, and it definitely verified everything that I had experienced thus far. And so as I was meeting with Father Dale once a month, and I met with a vocation director, still interiorly, I was not ready to accept it yet. But so when I was right before Christmas break of my senior year, Father Dale Ehrman said to me, you need to make a decision over Christmas break. So I think he knows that I know what I'm supposed to do.
So and, he kind of was pushing you over the finish line, or at least over the finish line of making the decision.
He was. And then about a week or two later, I made the decision to go to seminary. And then after that, everything started changing for the good.
So what did your parents think? They're good Catholic folks. I've known them for many years as well. Did they support you in this decision, or had they already kind of figured it out themselves? How did that work out for them?
Yeah, so they're very supportive. So I first told them about the possibility of me becoming a priest when I was a freshman in high school, and they kept it completely confidential. And they were the type that they supported me whatever God was calling me to do. That's what they wanted me to do. They didn't have an agenda. They didn't say, we want you to do this or that. They gave me the freedom to make a completely free decision, knowing that what I decide, what vocation I follow, they would support. And that was the best thing you could ask for. No pressure one way or the other. And I knew that they were praying for me every single day. So they were absolutely wonderful through it all.
They love you either way.
Right.
And I've heard that expressed before on large families. I think Father Hahn maybe said that in this same interview that his parents loved all their kids, all his siblings equally, and regardless of which direction they went into the vocation or a vocation not in the priesthood. So early in life, you had two siblings, one born and one not. Could you explain that and how that might have influenced or maybe been a help pushing you over the finish line in making this decision?
Sure. So I'm the oldest of three siblings, but tragically both of my siblings passed away. One died in utero in the womb about 5 months into pregnancy. The other died, sadly, 4 hours after he was born. So definitely by the third born, I had somewhat of a memory of all this. So was I thinking about priesthood at that age, at 5 years old? No, not directly. But I look back now, that experience made me very comfortable with death, able to not be afraid of death, to see, yes, it is a sad thing, but how God can work through it all. So one of the things that I became very comfortable with as a priest is being at people's deathbeds that maybe others who didn't have that experience maybe would have been more uncomfortable and taken a while to get used to. So I can see how God worked through that tragedy to help prepare me to become a priest later.
And perhaps your siblings are praying for you in heaven. I'm sure they are. They would have been considered baptized by blood. Is that not right?
Yeah, so actually the third one was actually baptized by water. So because they had a priest come right away, and he actually was baptized right before he died. So
I'm sure they are praying for you in heaven.
Absolutely. So
God bless them, and God bless you. This is a vocation show today. I'm Gordon Smith. I'm interviewing Father Will Summerlin of the Lafayette Diocese. I'm right here in his rectory, but he is newly assigned to the high school, Central Catholic in Lafayette. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy. When a business is looking to expand, they say it's all about location, location, location. But what about when the church needs to expand? To stretch out and reach those fallen away, estranged from the faith, or those who simply have never heard the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Then it's all about vocation, vocation, vocation. We need more people dedicated to the mission of serving the church, more priests, more deacons, more men and women of vowed service, and more lay workers willing to go into the fields. The harvest is rich, but the workers are few. Is God calling you to service? Pray on it, and while you're there, pray for more vocations. A simple request from your friends at Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back. This is Gordon Smith, and I'm interviewing Father Will Summerlin. I'm sitting here in his rectory over lunch table, actually. He lives up in Lafayette and is newly assigned to Central Catholic as the chaplain there. Father Summerlin, you left the high school at Guerin Catholic and you went directly in seminary. Where was that?
So right after high school, I went into St. John Vianney College Seminary, which was in St. Paul, Minnesota. That was 4 years there of education there. So you come out with a philosophy degree from there, and also very very intense human formation and spiritual formation. And then I transferred to Mundelein Seminary, which is the major seminary or theology seminary, where I came out with a theology degree and was 4 years at that one as well. And then I was ordained 2019.
Tell me a little bit about seminary. You were there with other gentlemen your age and older, maybe even younger, I don't know. But what was it like in seminary?
Yeah, so seminary is a unique experience. There's young men from all across the country, and most of them younger, but there are some that are older that have heard the call later in life. It's a very tight-knit community because you're all striving for the same thing, which is studying to become priest. You all live in the same building, same campus. You have the same schedule. You do a holy hour together every single morning. You have mass together every day. You meet with priests one-on-one for spiritual direction and formation. It's definitely a very unique experience. And would I want to be in seminary again now? No. but do I cherish the time that I had? Absolutely. It definitely helped me in many, many ways become a good a priest today. So,
and I'm sure it, like any setting where you have a bunch of guys together, there was pranks pulled on each other and different jokes that went around the campus, right?
That happened pretty regularly. So
you have a favorite one?
I was pranked actually quite a bit. I think one of the earlier pranks when I first entered seminary is they put Saran wrap around everything in my room.
Oh, nice.
So, and I had just ironed all my shirts and pants the night before. So those were also wrapped together. So, yeah, that was a little inconvenience.
Tell me, what do you feel the most important task is in being a priest?
Well, I think the church defines that the priest has three roles or three offices, which is the office of teaching. So that will obviously be very, very important, which will be huge in my life as the chaplain of Central Catholic, because I'll be teaching theology classes there. Secondly is the office of sanctifying or making people holy, which is dispensing the sacraments to people. And then the third is the office of governing, which is another word for the office of shepherding people. So I really look at my priesthood as those three offices: teaching, sanctifying, and governing the church. So,
well, you'll definitely be in a teaching position because you'll be influencing all those young teenagers into high school. Sanctifying, you're going to be giving and conferring the sacraments. And I meant to ask you this earlier, but and you kind of touched on it. What is your favorite sacrament to confer?
I mean, obviously, I love all the sacraments, but the one that I really love to confer is last rites on the deathbed. And I guess it goes back to my experience with my siblings, to be there for someone as they're dying and give them confession, anointing, and Holy Communion. It's a beautiful gift to be able to be a part of.
Yes, thank you for doing that. Thank you for your vocation as well. Are there things that people in your parish, which has been St. Boniface and before that St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, could do or not do to help you out in your ministry as a priest?
I think one thing that would be helpful for any priest is to never compare a priest to a previous priest who was there. Definitely not to his face. To not say things like, well, Father so-and-so used to do things this way, which can be hard, especially if the priest that you knew had been there for a while. But that's something that can really be detrimental to a priest's spirit when he's constantly being compared to the previous guy. So yes, people should call priests out if they're going outside the bounds of church teaching, absolutely.
Sure.
But they should also, you know, that this priest is a different priest.
Everybody has their own style.
Everyone has their own thing. So to not compare him to the previous guy would be helpful. I won't have to worry about that at Central Catholic because there hasn't been one in 30 years. But this is just a general thing for all people, especially in the parishes.
Although we have some VIP priests in the Lafayette Diocese that are graduates of Central Catholic. Who are they?
Well, I think the most recent one would be Father Elliot Zach. He's currently assigned to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Also, Father Thomas Hahn, who is the chaplain of Guerin several years ago. I know Father Ted Rothrock. The Dazinski brothers were from there. So there's quite a bit.
Right. What would you like people to know about you or the priesthood that most people don't know?
I think what I'd like people to know is that there are a lot of things priests do that people don't know about. So maybe if a priest comes in one day and he seems really, really tired, to give him the benefit of the doubt and say maybe he was at the hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know? So
yeah, for last rites.
For last rites. So there is a lot of things that, and which is part of the struggle I had when I was younger, right? I didn't know everything a priest does, because a lot of it is hidden, right? A lot of people don't, just a few people see it. So I think to always make sure that we keep that in mind whenever I wonder why Father's behaving this way today. Well, he's kind of quiet today, or to maybe think, well, maybe something happened the day before, the night before, because sometimes priests will go through just in one day what someone can experience in a whole lifetime.
Sure, sure.
You can have a wedding and a funeral on the same day. You could be going over to dinner at someone's house, which is a happy occasion, but then have to go to someone's house where their child just committed suicide, and you have to counsel them, right? So, and in everything, we can go through in one day, and that can be a lot to process. So just to kind of, to people to remember that.
Sure. Many people don't realize that the head pastor is responsible for all those things, including sometimes signing paychecks and making sure the alarm is set or unset, depending.
Right. So yeah, I won't have as much as a pastor would, but I will have, like, I'm on the Catholic Mission Board. I'll be a part of some interviews when they're hiring new people. So there will be some governing that I'll have to do, but yeah, not as much as a pastor.
So getting back to your own vocational call, and that was fascinating in the first half of this show, how that just happened. You were receiving, but not necessarily paying attention, or it got your attention, I guess. But is there a particular time when a parent should encourage or discourage or be open to their child having a vocational call?
Yeah, so I think the earlier the better. For parents, they don't want to push one vocation or another, but their job should be to educate their children about all the different vocations, to give them all the possibilities for them, right? So, and as soon as you can start doing that, the better, so that they can have it in their mind. And then to keep encouraging them, hey, make sure you're discerning all the vocations, you know? So that's kind of what parents should be doing, not saying, you should be a priest, or you should get married. Or they say, hey, you should be aware that there's many different vocations that God could be calling you to. You need to start asking God what his plan is for you. And then I think the earlier parents start doing that, the better.
And unfortunately, I've heard some parents before, and I think it's just not done with a bad motive in mind, but maybe a selfish motive, when they just discount the possibility that their boy might become a priest by saying, oh, I sure wanted grandchildren, you know? I mean, that would have been really nice. Or aren't you going to get married and have kids so I can be a grandpa? That is not helpful, and could be harmful. So as you said, I think all the possibilities need to be opened up to that child, and not discourage any of the possibilities, so that we can restore the priesthood in this country.
Exactly.
Tell me about your hobbies, Father.
So a couple hobbies I like to do in my spare time. Probably my biggest hobby is I love riding my motorcycle. That's something I'll do, like, in an evening after a long day, just go out riding for an hour or two. Sometimes with my dad's got one too, so sometimes we'll go riding together. Sometimes I'll just go by myself. And I also like to play golf. I'm not very good at golf, but I go golfing with some family members. It's just great to be outdoors, kind of that competition, healthy competition with
sure.
other men. So those are kind of my two main hobbies.
So is this a moped or a Harley? What kind of bike do you have?
It's a Harley. Yeah, it's a Harley. So
that's hardly a moped.
Harley moped. Yeah, a lot more powerful than a moped.
So is this the big hog type?
It's got the same engine size as a big hog, but it's got a smaller body. Of a smaller one, so it's a little bit kind of zippier.
You might want to get that muffler fixed. I've seen people around town complaining about the loud muffler.
Oh, I'll have to work on that.
So you are a priest for 5-6 years now?
4 years.
4 years, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And what is your favorite assignment been so far? Which parish have you connected with the most?
Well, I would say I love them all. But they're all just different. I mean, San Elizabeth Seton, it was the first parish assignment of a priest is always a cherished place, because that's where you first learn to become a priest. Even though you've been in seminary 8 years, that only teaches you so much. You still feel like you don't know. It's kind of like with anything, right? Like, you don't learn it until you really get in it. So that first year is when you're learning how to say Mass well, when you're hearing confessions regularly, when you're going to the hospitals for the first time. And so people, they really treat that first-year priest really well, very supportive. And Father Rothrock, my pastor at the time there, great mentors, and he had a lot of trust in me and just kind of let me do what I needed to do and didn't micromanage. And that's how I learned best, is just by jumping in and doing it, but knowing that he was always going to be there if I needed help. St. Boniface, St. Lawrence, been a priest a year when I arrived there, so a lot more comfortable. And these parishes, they're old parishes. They were established like in the late 1800s, early 1900s.
And they're beautiful. They're beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful church buildings. Families that have been going there for decades. Sometimes you go back centuries. There's so much history that's here. And again, the people here, they love their priest in Lafayette. So those 3 years are very, very cherished as well. Central Catholic, obviously brand new there, still trying to figure it out. But so far, it's been going very, very well. So I can't say I have a favorite assignment. I like them all, but they're just all very different.
What would you say to someone who didn't have a strong belief in the Holy Eucharist? Because that is a thing that came out in this Pew Research poll recently. And that needs to be really a matter of catechesis, doesn't it, Father, so that people understand?
Yeah, so I think part of the problem has been in the last several decades of the church, the church has just done very poor in talking about the Eucharist and truly what the Eucharist is. So you can see why over time it's kind of built up where people don't believe in the Eucharist anymore as much as they used to. So I'd say, yes, there needs to be catechesis from the pulpit on a regular basis about the Eucharist. But also I think people need to encounter the Eucharist like in a very personal way to come to that belief. You have to have both. You have to hear the catechesis, but then you also have to be face-to-face with the Eucharist, right? I know that's how my grandfather, my mom's dad, converted to Catholicism at age 85.
Oh, that's cool.
He started going to, my grandmother died before he did, many years before he did. And so he went to the masses that were offered for her. But he wasn't all about the Catholic Church at all, but he went just to honor her. And just by being at the Mass, by being in the presence of the Eucharist, Jesus in the Eucharist just softened his heart over time. And then so much so that he became Catholic 4 years before his death. So you have to have the catechesis from the pulpit, but you also have to be actually in the presence of the Eucharist, and then God can do a tremendous work on the soul.
That's a wonderful story. Well, today we've been interviewing Father Summerlin, and he is a pastor of the Lafayette Diocese. This is Gordon Smith, and you've been listening to Sons of Melchizedek. Thank you, Father.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a special edition of Faith in Action entitled Sons of Melchizedek. Join us again next time when we'll feature another priest from the area. If you are interested in having your priest appear on this show, please contact us at Catholic Radio Indy.
You always hear 100% Catholic programming 24/7, 7 days a week, right here on Catholic Radio Indy.